Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Happiness Is podcast with me, your host, Bruce Aitchison, sporting his Kowloon top today because he's thinking about Hong Kong, wishing he was there. But if you can't be in Hong Kong, what do? Well, you hook up to speak to an absolute ray of sunshine, someone who is back on the pod. We made that promise that it would happen again, and here we go. To have a look at the Six Nations, to have a chat, to see what she's up to, the one and the only Anna Capeless. Look at this. Where is she? Hello.
What's happening?
You're what's happening. The sunglasses are on because you are in Galway.
No, go again. You might be fooled to think it's Galway, to be honest, because it's so windy and cold where I am. The glasses are just to throw, just to like intend to like make people envious of the fact that I'm living in Spain at the moment. But I'm living in a very northwesterly zone. Actually, I live in a town called La Coruña, which people only know because of Deportivo de La Coruña. So if you never knew where that was, look it up on the map. It's like as close to Ireland, as close to Galway as you could be if you were still in Spain. So it's... And like the sun will come out and like, I'm like, oh, I'll go outside and maybe do some work outside. And I can't even hold down the page because it's so windy. And then it's raining a minute later. It rains loads here as well. So I made a great choice.
So when you get that call, would you like to come and play rugby in Spain? You're picturing beaches, sunshine, sun cream, sunglasses. Yeah, training late at night so it's nice and cool. And yeah. Actually, you swapped like for like.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I knew I wouldn't play until like after Christmas. So I just basically reached out and I was like, who needs a back row? And this team here needed a back row. So I was like, yeah. And I had thought about it. I was like, oh, I'd like somewhere sunnier, but they needed me. So I was like, yeah, okay, let's do it. And yeah, it's been an experience. I studied Spanish, so I'm happy to be here like practicing and improving and like using it finally. So yeah.
So how does it work when you're on the pitch? Does the Spanish that you learnt for 4 years transfer on a give me the ball, ruck over?
Yeah, it's hard. Because even like talking on the pitch is hard anyway, to give, you know, the right like effective communication. When I always think like, because I'm obviously a rugby coach as well, and like talking on the pitch is something you have to practice. Like you can't just arrive on the pitch and give, like, for example, in the defensive line, the right communication to the people around you unless you practice it. It's like actually learning and practicing a language. So I'm really strict on that as a coach. Like, you have to be talking all the time and giving as much information as possible. And like, I know other coaches will say, no, you have to give like the right detail, because someone, you need to like deliver exactly the right information, but you can't get to that. It's like being able to speak Spanish perfectly, like straight off the bat. Like, you can't learn a language. You have to be bad at a language for a really long time before you get good at it. It's the same with talking on the pitch. So to combine the two of them, like, yeah, it's hard, but I think as long as you're saying something, people know where you are. So even if I'm giving, like, saying the wrong thing, or at least I'm talking and they know where I am, whether it's in an attack or defense or whatever. And usually that just works anyway. But do you know what I find really hard is coaching. Coaching is hard in another language, because you have to like give commands, and as well, you're trying to be like really strict and like really energetic and blah, blah, blah. And then you say something wrong and they laugh at you and you're like, oh no, I've just lost them. I'm going home. That's been the most difficult thing, coaching in Spanish. Yeah. But I love it.
You must be a whirlwind for this group. I mean, they must have a million questions for you.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, it's just a different kind of environment. I feel like they're actually not that accustomed to, I find anyway, especially probably the environments that I've come from, like in the Prem and playing for Ireland and kind of high performance environments where you ask and you discuss and you kind of tease out an answer. They don't do that much here. Like, so I'm injured at the moment, sadly. Hopefully it's not too bad in the long run, but I'm out for a little while. So I've taken a few like drills down at training, and I'd ask questions like, okay, what do you think? And they're like, do you know, they're just not used to that kind of like discussion on the pitch. And me, that's my style as a teacher and as a coach. Like, okay, what do we think? What can we do better? Like, getting them to give the answers all the time. But it's different here. They're not as accustomed to that. So yeah, it's interesting for me to learn and practice that and like see how else I can, you know, what other methods of coaching I can use.
I love it when you slip into Spanish, because a lot of that Irish disappears. You've pretty much nailed that accent, haven't you?
I thought I had a good accent until they all started taking the piss out of me here. They repeat things after me and I'm like, stop. But actually, I for me, like, to have to use the accent to know which language I'm speaking in. So like, to go from Spanish to French, because I studied a lot of languages, to go to switch between them, I have to use like a different voice and a different accent, or else the words don't come to my head. So but I was talking about this, I'm doing another rugby podcast at home, and I was saying, I was like, I'm a real what's a nice way of saying it? I'm very annoying. Do you know when like you're talking to someone who's like lived in France for a while, and they're like, you know, they go to a cafe and like, oh yes, can I have a coffee and a croissant? You know, that's me, because I can't say croissant. Like, it's not in me. I feel like a fool either way. So I can't order a croissant anymore. I have to order something else because I feel like such a fool if I say it with the Irish accent or with the French accent, depending on who I'm around. So I'll have to be in France to order a croissant from now on.
Oh, I love it. It's so good. Are your teammates aware of the Six Nations going on just now?
Yeah, they are aware, and most of them will have watched it. But it's interesting, there's a Four Nations competition out at the moment as well. I don't know if you saw that, but South Africa, Spain, USA and Canada are here in Madrid. I'm actually going to Madrid tomorrow to watch the games. So they're invested in that as well, because obviously Spain are playing. And yeah, they know a lot about it, but it's more kind of like the big players and like just the score lines and stuff. And it kind of, I found, especially for the men's Six Nations, I was really excited. We have a really cool clubhouse in the club. And they were all going there. I was like, oh great, I'll go there as well to watch the Six Nations. Like, they were putting it on the big screen, and I was like, really invested obviously in the men's Six Nations as well, and like all the games. But for them, they kind of go just to hang out and have rugby on in the background. So like, a lot of people were like talking to me like all throughout the game. And I was just like, like trying to watch the game, like trying to listen to the commentary in Spanish as well. So It's certainly a different vibe. Like, we're so lucky. Do you know how lucky we are to be Six Nations country? Genuinely, like, it's so exciting.
You're very lucky at the moment.
Being
Irish, it doesn't get much luckier for the men's Six Nations. The women's, well, the men, it's a little bit of a tougher shift at the moment.
Unfortunately for me, I'm not a man.
You must have enjoyed the Grand Slam.
I only mean that half in jest. But yes, I enjoyed the Grand Slam, and I love watching the Irish men's team play. I think they're so exciting at the moment. And like, just all the talk around the World Cup is just so exciting. But I think France are just class as well. I think this could happen, like, with the seemingly the best Irish team we've ever had and the best opportunity we've ever had to win a World Cup, we could be knocked out in the quarterfinal by France, because France are at home as well. So it could be just your same old Ireland turning up to a World Cup kind of vibe. It could be. So let's see. But I'm very excited for this year for men's rugby.
Yeah, it is class. And the women's, obviously one of the big bits of news is the blue shorts for Ireland. And there's been lots of talk around that. Social media has really taken that, and the support for it's been class. Long time coming, but happy it's there.
I really liked the white shorts, so I'm going to miss them. And yeah, it's cool, because it does, like, it takes that out of it. I've certainly felt very anxious in, like, especially at the back of the scrum, where, like, your arse is in the air, and, like, you could be, you know, you could be on your period, and you could be thinking, like, oh, geez, is there something on show here? So, yeah, that's definitely great that that's gone, like, and that anxiety is gone. But there's parts to it. Like, Wales also have a sponsor, you know, that gives them, like, period safe underwear, and they've then kept their white shorts. So although I think it's great from Canterbury and stuff, what I'm a little bit like, what I'm going to miss a little bit is our uniformity with the rest of the union. You know, the men's, the under 20s, like an Irish team, you know, that turns up to play, like, we now look different to them again. And it was a big deal for us to have our crest changed. I know it's a slight, it is a slightly different thing, but we used to have a circular crest, which meant, and all of the representative teams had a circular crest in their jersey. But we argued, like, we're a senior team, we should have the proper senior team crest. And, like, they changed it. And we were like, aside from the sponsor, had the same, you know, the same look on the pitch as the men. And I'm going to miss that a little bit, I think. And I was kind of thinking, like, you know, if the union really wanted to, like, really show that they were on board with this decision, why didn't they get the whole union to change their whole uniform and change the men's shorts to navy as well? What do you think of that?
I reckon there would be some Irish rugby stalwarts spontaneously combusting in the street if they pulled that one.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. I think it would never happen in a million years, but there's a part of me that's like, why not? Like, why wouldn't you commit so much to say, you know, we're not going to have the women's team looking any different? And now I don't want to take away from the fact that, yeah, in there, easy decision, let's talk to Canterbury, let's change the shorts, bang, done. That was, like, you know, good and fair play to whoever made that decision. But I think there's more to it as well, because we've lost that uniformity with the rest of the union now. So we'll see if other teams, like, follow suit and stuff. Because, you know, they've changed it at Wimbledon. They've relaxed the rules for female players at Wimbledon, which is awesome as well. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic, and one that we can continue to discuss. Like, why not? And it makes it seem like, let's take the taboo away from it. It's not a big deal, you know, like, to have, like, blood in your shorts. Like, it happens, women, every single month. So for sure it's going to happen, you know, players who play in white shorts. So it's definitely an interesting topic, and good that people are speaking about it, you know?
This is why I love speaking to you, because I hate that phrase, thinking outside the box. It's just, Anna Banana thinks like Anna Banana. You've brought things up there I'd never thought of.
Yeah.
And but it's important to have those discussions and those different views.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't mean that I'm definitely right or they're definitely wrong or they're right and I'm wrong, whatever. Like, it, you know, discussing these things and keeping them as a moving topic is what's important. And I would say that about anything, yeah, about everything in the game and in life in general. Let's like stay open about it and let's take a taboo away from everything.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So you mentioned being in the back row there. Sarah Hunter, I mean, kind of fairy tale finish. She finishes up north, big win against Scotland. You know, she gets to captain. Do you like that, or was that a bit too soap opera? What's your thoughts on her finishing the way she did?
You know, a few people have been kind of not so sure about the way England have done things at the moment and the fact that they've kept their same management from the World Cup. And they're going to do one Six Nations and then change it up. But also, there are different ways to do things. And people said, oh, that's weird that she's retiring at the start of the Six Nations. But also, I think it was the right thing for them to do. And I think she deserved that. Like, she's England's most capped player. It's insane what she's achieved. You know, when I met Sarah Hunter first, actually, You're going to laugh because you think I'm a nut job anyway, right?
Of course I am. No question.
I used to play for Austria because I studied abroad in Austria. In Vienna.
Of course you did. Why would you do anything conventionally? I love that you start that. I played for Austria.
So Austria went to like a European training camp with, who else is there, like Poland, Hungary, a few other of the kind of tier whatever European teams, and Graham Smith came as a coach and he brought Sarah Hunter as a coach. It was on like Lake Balaton in Hungary. I don't even know what year it was, whatever year I lived in like long time ago, not to give away my age too much. But she came to that, like, how random, like, out of some like European rugby coaching camp in.
She must have turned to Graham Smith and went, "Have you heard the accent on that Austrian player?"
She's, check her passport. She's not Austrian. Now, the thing is that I didn't actually play in any official tournament. I only played with them kind of on the interim. And then when we got to the Europeans, I was the manager. So, yeah.
Always on time, always ready and prepared.
Says your man. Says your man. Yeah. But that's when I met her first. And then to kind of meet her on the pitch, like, she's such a legend. Like, and she's so, like, you know, softly spoken and just works like a demon around the pitch. And I'm delighted for her to have finished that way. I was bawling, crying every time, like, they showed her parents and her niece on the pitch with her. And it was so emotional and so deserved. And, like, what a legend of the game. Like, fair play to her and England for kind of giving her that. And I think nobody would begrudge her that, especially nobody within the environment, because they've got so much from her that they you know, she's earned that, and they were delighted to give her that opportunity to finish, like, on her terms. So I wonder if she's still out celebrating.
Just still in her kit.
Yeah.
Just still in a bar in Newcastle somewhere. Ooh, just
that's sad, actually. That's a really sad thought, like, to think, because I always found that after an international game, especially, the moment after when the game finishes, like, when you're in the dressing room, like, still in your kit. Like, I get sad sometimes when people start to, like, remove their kit, like, quickly. I like the moment where everyone's just in their kit. And, you know, like, the men's teams do this a lot, where they invite the other team in to have a beer with them. I've never done that. We have never, ever done that. And I'd love
Even
to make
with
it.
The Barbarians?
Not in the dressing room. Where we would have had, like, drink there ready to go. And it depends, like, for the Barbarians, certainly, and depends if, you know, you've won a final or whatever and what the team is. But I've never invited a team in or been invited to another dressing room. Isn't that mad? Because the men do it, like, every weekend.
Yeah, that's a shame because I love that. I don't really like the cameras being in the changing rooms. I don't like the TV camera in the corner showing you halftime. I always loved the changing room, and it was just your place and you were all together. And you're right. There's those moments after the game, win or lose. Sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's loud, sometimes you sing, sometimes. But those were just for you.
It's kind of a sacred space. Yeah, I agree with that. So I'm just thinking of Sarah Hunter in the dressing room afterwards, like taking off the jersey for the last time, you know, and when you know it's the last time, like that's a big thing. When you don't know, it's probably easier because you're just like, you know, you're thinking like, you always treasure it anyway. Like I always like hold the jersey and like squeeze it for a little bit before I put it back or whatever. But, you know, for her to know she was taken off for the last time, like, oh God, I actually feel like getting choked up now. Or else she was probably like, thank feck, I'm done. 141 times. Jesus, lads, that was excessive.
I'll see you at 5 o'clock on Friday for a beer.
Yeah. So,
one of my favorite bits about Sarah Hunter is that she's always worn black classic Adidas World Cup boots. Just no nonsense, no white, no, I just want my World Cups. That's it. Love that about Sarah Hunter.
Yeah.
Class act. So, first round, any surprises? Bit disappointed with Ireland.
Yeah, certainly disappointed with the result as well as the performance. It was a bit all over the place, which is a bit sad. And I very much feel for the girls. I'd like to have seen a bit more cohesion, but it was hard because they kind of were trying different players in different positions and seemed to shuffle around a lot during the game. And then we all saw that in the second half, they got into it a little bit more. So I'm a little bit frustrated for them, and they will be as well, that they didn't like hit the ground running. So it kind of feels like a bit of they're already kind of on the back foot. Would they have beaten Wales anyway? I don't think so. Like, I was so impressed with Wales as well. And I'm really happy for them that they were able to, you know, it shows their professional program, like shows how it's benefited them. Even when you look at them, like they're all in such great shape, and I know how hard they're working, and like I hope they can kind of continue that form. Like, I'd be really happy for them to continue that form because they've worked so hard. And well, we won't get on to next weekend's game yet, but like in terms of Ireland, like, yeah, new players, young players coming in, very inexperienced squad. So it's always going to be difficult, but like to start again at the bottom. Not in terms of like comparing to other teams, but in terms of like building a new squad, like it has to be done. So here we are. This is the journey that they're on, and there's a lot of talking points around it. And a lot of people were very disappointed, especially off the back of the men's Six Nations, like to be elated by like the men's senior team and the under-20s to have won 2 Grand Slams, and then, you know, not be able to follow through with the women's is a bit frustrating. And I'd love to see us in the same place as the men's team. And, you know, for my whole Irish career, we were always going for third. Now, we never arrived at an England or French game who were always 1 and 2. We never arrived at one of those games thinking like, well, you know, this is in the bin, we're not going to win. Like, you always believe you can win. But we were still, you know, realistic in terms of like, where do we aim for? And like, there's these fleeting moments where you're like, right, we can win this. We could win a Grand Slam, because you believe in yourself so much and you believe in the team so much, you know. So, but we always were aiming for third. And I think that's a long stretch for this team now, especially after the result versus Wales, like unless there are other kind of changes and results, which there still could be. But France will come to Cork now this weekend, and like they will certainly believe like, okay, we can perform at our best, get into their heads, fracture what they're trying to achieve, and make it a bad day for them. So it's going to be a big ask, but like it's tough. They're in a tough place, a big kind of transitional place, and I just want to see them perform well, and I think.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Given the second half versus Wales for Ireland, they'll be able to kind of know, okay, we finished on that note, we can carry that note into the next game and go on better and perform even better again.
It's interesting you said about aiming for third, because England just seem like they're on another tier to what's going on. How do you prepare for that? I mean, Scotland concede almost 60 points at the weekend, and they're short of a few due to injuries and GB sevens, but you know that's a pretty tough start. How do you prepare for playing England at the moment?
I think you have to kind of, depending on where England are at, but they might change up their squad a little bit, kind of give some younger players shots, try some new combinations or whatever. It always depended when they were playing France, because they'd usually kind of change up their team a lot, and then the week before France they'll put out the team that they want to play versus France. So if you're playing them right before they play France, you get their strongest team. It depends, you know, you'll do your homework on them, look at the squad and think about that. But if it is, if you know that the best players in the world are coming into your back garden to get a win and go home, to get 5 points and go home, you're just like, right, I'm here for it. This is why I play. This is why I play international rugby. Like, I'm not going to stand down. I'm not going to let them run over me. I don't care who she is. I don't care how many caps she has. I'm going to play my best and let the rest take control of itself.
I love it. I'm going to do my best. It's just been announced that England-France is going to be the biggest attendance for any women's international, which is incredible. How do you think the game's going? Is, you know, are you confident about where we're going
for women's rugby? But it's hard. Like, it's hard for England because they've been at the top for so long now that I actually think that that's what lost them the World Cup final. I think that they weren't challenged enough in their, not even for a season, not even for a year or 2 years. For a long time, they haven't been pushed to produce and pull something out of their souls. Like, you know, pull a win out of the bag, grind out a win. They haven't been in that position. And then when the pressure came on, now I know they had 14 players in the World Cup final, but I would have backed England with 14 players any day over any other team in the world coming into that World Cup, genuinely. They could have played every game of 14 men and I think they women, and I think they still would have won. But they were under the pump so much. They hadn't been under the pump that much in however long. So it's difficult for them as well to really reach those new heights. And like, fair play to New Zealand, I thought they were unbelievable, but really I wanted England to win to show the world, like, this is what we need for our teams. And like, New Zealand, having won the World Cup, are now in a bit of a, they haven't figured things out. I don't see the urgency to build on the legacy of their World Cup in New Zealand. They're still without a coach. I think that if they came second, or if they lost that final, there might be slightly more urgency to be like, right, how do we win it the next time? Because if you turn up to your World Cup like having thrown your coaching team together, now it was brilliant and they, you know, there was a lot of knowledge there, but it was thrown together the year before and they still ended up winning. Sure, why would the Union do anything different then? They're like, great, whew, we got away with that one, you know. And I think that's the attitude for a lot of unions towards the women's team. And I'd love to see, like it's great to see the professional, all the professional teams like popping up here now and everywhere. But like, how do you beat England? That is what you need to be thinking about. Not how do you beat Ireland and Italy, and because, you know, all those competitive games, we need to be aiming for the stars here, like building a program that means that within a couple of years, you could beat England. So yes, it's great. They're all starting to give their contracts now, but because it's coming so late, it has to be more than enough that the unions are offering their teams. And it's, you know, they're not doing it because they really want to. They're doing it now because they have to. I think that's definitely true for some unions more than others. So I think it'll still take a bit of time. Like, how could England be selling out? Or sorry, I'm saying selling out. Do you know what? They could sell out Twickenham. Do you know, I'm seeing it all over Twitter now. They'll certainly sell it out for the World Cup. Could they sell it out for this Six Nations? That game is the last game. There's going to be enough hype built by then that actually they could sell out Twickenham this year. And then other teams are like getting handfuls of thousands. Like the disparity is massive. Or sorry, I shouldn't say disparity, but the gap is still so massive that I'm impatient with how long it's going to take to close.
Yeah, that's a worry, because England seem like they're so far ahead. They've got the resources. They've got the competitive league, although the league's now full of players from other countries. How do other countries manage, do you think? You said England were maybe a bit undercooked for the World Cup.
Mm.
So where do they go and find that competitive edge, and how do the other teams try and close that gap?
I don't know, in England's case, could you have done anything different? I'm not criticising them for that, because it's completely,
yeah,
they're the ones leading the way, you know, and I think they've done everything they can to make themselves the most professional outfit, and they couldn't have done another thing. In terms of like closing the gap, you have to build a league like they have in England. We can't all be, you know, I've young players again touched me, you know, would you recommend playing abroad? Where would you recommend? And I have to say England. I'm like, get in touch with some English teams. And like, the danger for saying that is that if you're an Irish player going in, if there's an English player in that club in your position ahead of you, she has to start. And they have those, it depends on the team and the discussions and all the rest, but essentially that's why they built the Prem, is to build, you know, develop their own players. So you could be unlucky in that if there's an English player ahead of you, they have to play. We cannot all be relying on the English league. Everyone needs to kind of start being a bit smarter about building their own home domestic leagues. They have a plan in Ireland for it now.
Could we get a URC, do you think? Could we get a couple of Scottish teams, four Irish teams, four Welsh teams? Is that
the difficult thing with that? Is if you're going to, and what you have to do is make those teams like professional as possible. So even if you go like semi-pro on all those players and they keep part-time jobs or whatever, that would be, you'd have to do it that way, because I know for me, when I played for Munster, and I adore Munster and I would have done it like a million times over, Munster is big. You could have to drive for 2 hours to training and then drive back. And then you only have a 3-match series and you're driving for half the year just to play 3 games. And then if you're getting more games and you're ramping it up, you have to keep driving, like to make those, you'd have to centralize that program around those provinces. So that would be difficult to achieve. I think it might have been easier to do with just your club. where girls are closer and you've got more teams and more opportunities to play. But look, this is what the RFU have decided. I think they're going to go with that, like to kind of start the professionalisation of the provinces. So yeah, good. I'm going to back them on it, but I think it's a lot more difficult than it seems just on paper.
So your passion and enthusiasm, your knowledge, the future for you in coaching?
I think so. I certainly hope so. It's kind of one thing that saved me a little bit. Like when I retired from Ireland last year, and especially what COVID did to the last couple of years of my international playing career and my, you know, kind of elite level playing career, I'm disappointed with it. And the one kind of comfort for me is that, right, I'm going to continue in women's rugby as a coach. And it's one kind of saving grace for me that I'm like, okay, whatever I didn't achieve on the pitch as a player, maybe I can go and achieve it as a coach. And I don't think there are enough women's coaches. And like, it's very easy for me to be like, we don't have enough women's coaches. You need to go coach. You need to go coach. I can't say that to other women if I don't apply that same rationale to myself. I do believe we need more women's coaches and opportunities for women's coaches. So I can't say we need more women's coaches if I don't do it myself.
Who do you look at from your playing days and think they could be an elite level coach?
It's a good question. Jeepers, lots of girls. And actually, do you know what? Anybody, because you can't just, like, you know, for example, in the men's Six Nations, we analyze the coaches so much. You know, people talking about like Steve Borthwick and Eddie Jones and Andy Farrell and all these coaches, we like analyze them so much. But all those coaches are different. And I think that, like, there's no one way to coach as long as you have a team around you that, like, that covers all bases. So, you know, if you've got a head coach that is brilliant technically and not so good at like building relationships with players, if you've got a team around you that can do that, that's fine. If your head coach is all about like personality, culture and everything, if you're getting the technical stuff from someone else, it's all about the team. I don't think like she's going to be an amazing coach all on her own. Like, I definitely think that that's a silly thing to say. And actually, I'm saying this now, but I said the same thing to my mom and my sister a while back. I was like, look, I want to be a coach, but I don't think I'm good enough in like this area, like whatever area I mentioned to them. And they literally like went for me. They're like, Anna, that's such a stupid thing to say. Why would you say such a stupid thing? Like giving out to me. And I was like, actually, yeah, you're right, because there's no point to me. But it's such a typical women's thing to do, you know, like, oh, I'm not fully qualified. Whereas men, like, apply for jobs, you know, apply for jobs that they don't have qualifications for. But women won't, you know, and it's very kind of typical feminine side of me to be like, no, I think I'm, but I have to overlook those feelings and, like, push past those feelings. Because I know when I was a coach, same time I was teaching, and I used to be teaching during the day and then coaching in the afternoon when school finished. And I remember this feeling so clearly of, like, looking out the window and thinking to myself, like, I cannot wait to get out there in the pitch when my classes are done. And I loved teaching as well. But like, when you're saying that to yourself, I think there's something else to that. Like, I have to remember that feeling whenever I get these doubts, like, oh, I actually don't think I'm going to coach. No, it's too hard. I'm not good at this. I'm not good at that. But I have to remember that, though, that phrase that I said to myself then, like, cannot wait to get out there. I'm keeping that in my head to remind myself, like, yes, I could make this my job and not a, you know, couple of hundred euro a month job, like an actual job eventually.
I've got absolutely no doubt, but I'm going to absolutely stitch you up here and put you on the spot. Tell me who would be on your coaching team, one or two names.
Okay.
I would be your manager, obviously.
You're the manager.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Fiona Hayes as scrum coach. Do you know Fiona? She used to play for Ireland. She's a coach in Ireland now as well. I'll give her the scrum job.
Has to, because I know nothing about scrums.
Okay. Me neither. I'm only a back row.
Yeah. You're just hanging on with your arse in there.
Well, do you know what? That's it. Do you know what, though? Back row is interesting because when you're at scrum time, the front row and the second row, especially front row, gets so much coaching. I always, like, the back row are always able to stand and listen to the points they give the front rows. So I feel like when I try and help front row and they're like, what does she know? She's not front row at all. I'm like, yeah, but I always listen to the coaches when they're giving out to you. So, but I wouldn't class myself as a scrum coach. No. Mo Hunt.
Yes.
I'll give her the backs job. Defense. Let's see. Cause I need a big team here. A big team. Oh, defense. Oh my God, there's so many players. I've played with so many players. I've played in so many teams.
Nobody from Rugby Austria sort of come into the front of your mind here?
Not currently. That's no slight on them. I've spoken to Austria about doing some coaching for them going forward as well. So I hope I can make that work, like, down the line. But coaching is hard when you're still playing, because everyone trains and plays in the same days and nights that you do. So I found it hard to find myself a team to commit to. So I'm just like, technical stuff and player coach stuff is kind of fine for now. But yeah, you've really put me on the spot there.
No, I like that, though. I like that.
If I leave someone out who really wants to be my assistant coach, like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want anyone listening to this being like, she never picked me.
Well, just you say to them that they need to apply and put themselves forward no matter what you said.
Yeah. I don't know which team we're coaching yet, but.
Well, I'm pretty sure they'll be a happy bunch. Anna, been class speaking to you. Thank you for giving up time again. It always makes me smile. Come on then, Ireland, we're shooting for third. Where can they finish?
I'm going to give them every benefit of the doubt. And I think that Italy are scared of Ireland, so I think Ireland could take a win against Italy. And I think that Italy could beat Wales. So I'm going to say third. Because I believe that they can as well. So I'm going to say third. If I'm wrong, which could be given the nature of, like, the Six Nations in general, it's not because I didn't believe in the girls. So
love it. And who's your player to watch for Ireland? Who should we be watching?
Hang on, I had the team up there a second ago.
Yeah, you were liking number eight.
Oh, yeah, Derv Nicovard at number eight. I'm excited for her. She played so well for Munster in the Interpros. So, yeah, let's go with Derv Nicovard, who is, like, every commentator's nightmare, I think.
Yeah, well, my nightmare as well. That's why I called her number eight. But I'm now going to put her in my fantasy team.
Yes, do. Yeah, good shout. Derv. So her name is Dervla. She speaks Irish at home. She's from, like, an Irish speaking part of Cork. But you can call her Derv, and then her surname is Nicovard.
Yeah, I believe you. I'm 100% behind you there. But
I presume
I do my fantasy team, I get so, I pick people I know or people I like or people I've spoken to, and actually I probably should be a bit more. Because they don't know what I've picked. Like, they could not care.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
But I do, especially with the Scottish girls, I find that one. I mean, let's face it, if you were still there, you'd be in the team. No
that's
question.
You know me.
I know. But I ended up dropping, I stupidly dropped Chloe Rowley. I mean, what was I doing? And she would tackle me if she knew that. But I dropped Chloe. But I only got 458 points on the first one. So I'm hoping that I can get up a bit in week two.
But fantasy rugby is funny because now everyone's really stats nerdy. Like everyone's like stats. Which makes you like, I don't know, does it make you enjoy the game more or less?
I did it through the men's. I did the women's last year, and I fared slightly better on week one, but I'm determined to get it right. So I'm going to study the teams and I'm going to make sure I perform better this time. It's a great thing though, because I think it's making people more aware of the players and they're paying attention. Yeah. I get what you mean. It can get a bit too much like stats, but there's a name attached to the stat, and if that means it raises the awareness of that player, I think that's a good
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. This isn't to take away that I think it's a brilliant thing, but for me personally, in my mind, I just think I'd kind of obsess over it a little bit too much. So I think it's easier for me to kind of relax while watching it and not to kind of see it through rugby stats eyes. Now, I must say, Catherine Buggy is on the bench this weekend for Ireland for her first cap, so that's really exciting for her, because she's been in and out of camps for a while and picked up injuries and stuff. So, like, fair play to Buggy. She'll get her first cap for Ireland this weekend.
That is so cool, Catherine Buggy. That's just class. That is class.
Well, her name.
Her name. Being Buggy, that's just cool. Holly Aitchison's always in my team. Holly Aitchison gets picked no matter what. I love that an Aitchison. I was gutted that an Aitchison didn't win the World Cup, but hopefully she'll win the next one.
He's certainly, yeah. Well, that's the thing about England. Like, so many of those players, especially because it's now only a 3-year turnaround.
Yeah,
will be back with their tails up, and in England. I was going to say the best thing about like going over to New Zealand, like for the World Cup, because I was there, is that there were so many people there who, like, you know, from the rugby world and who are all interested in women's rugby, particularly. It's just like being in this bubble of like a world that we've always wanted. There's no like no one challenging you, no like no toenails, no like. You know, everyone had full respect for the game and everyone's talking about the game and all the rest, but like it was also like everyone was on holidays,
yeah,
because everyone was just there, like had their time off, went to New Zealand to, so like when it comes to England, like everyone just needs to realize they need to book the whole thing off and just not turn up to work for those 8 weeks, and that'll be fine.
It's going to be a riot. You're right though, the 3-year, there's a lot of the Scottish girls I think are going to hang on that maybe would have, but because they had to do the 5-year cycle, it's 3 years, let's have a crack at it. So it'll be interesting to see. I think there, after this next one, there'll probably be quite a big turnover of players, won't there?
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Amazing to see you.
You too.
You're a busy lady.
No worries. Come visit me in Spain.
where it's cold, windy, and wet. That's exactly what I need.
You don't need any sun cream, but bring a rain jacket.
You always need sun cream when you've got no hair on your head.
That's true.
I need sun cream in Scotland.
True.
Thank you. Bye. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Absolutely love it. Ray of Sunshine. If you enjoyed it, you can catch us on Apple, Acast and Spotify. You can watch on Facebook and YouTube. It's well worth catching up, and give Anna a follow on social media, because she's an absolute riot and the future is very, very bright. I have got no doubt she is going to be at the elite level in coaching very, very soon. See you all soon. My name's Bruce Aitchison from the Happiness Is podcast, and my happiness is egg-shaped.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.